get started. This is Rob. Welcome. As I start out all my coaching calls, before we go into any of the work, what's on your mind, and how was your week, and did you get a chance to spend some time on the lesson?
Yes. So I'm almost finished with week six.
Okay.
Although I need to go back because I was sort of half listening to some of the week five stuff. So I think I might just go back through that and start over again. Where I think I'm failing, and I have an office week next week, which is really helpful, except for one day. I need to go match what I'm listening to the actual modules. That's what I have not done well. I'm basically just listening to the calls. But I understand conceptually what's going on. I think it would reinforce, and I would be better off by going through the modules as well.
Yeah, if you could watch the videos and then listen to the calls, that would be just exactly what they're doing.
Okay.
And that would be very, I mean, you're just going to absorb more because you're hearing me tell you what you need to know for the week, and then you're hearing them wrestle with the challenges of the week. Without that, by just listening, let's assume they watched like this. I just had a group that really, really watched the video and took notes. And so we just spent the whole time discussing their questions and their challenges with doing the work. And that's the way it's technically supposed to work.
So I'll do that. I'll go back. I can't re-listen to every post-call, but I'll go back through all the modules, and then I'll start with five again, and I think that should be helpful. But I feel pretty good about my foundation up until now, but you're right. I mean, clearly that's missing in what I'm doing, so I will make a note to do that now.
It's good. Questions, Mary? What's anything sticking or anything, any challenges? It's a lot, but, you know, take it into bites.
Yeah, I agree. I feel pretty good about, I'm comfortable in that role. And so just being able to hear some of your responses is helpful. I mean, little things I picked up, like at one point when you're talking to Kristen about the fact that, look, that's the old way to manage a practice. The new way for financial advising is you're really sort of a concierge and a life coach. And I really, that resonated with me because I think that's very true, not just with financial advisors, but that's true of wholesalers as well. And so it's been interesting to sort of draw some of those parallels and thinking about how we are as connectors. But what I also found really interesting and what I think is a question for me is I was surprised that this is the first group that has ever taken their CSA or their operations person and really put them in the empowered position of leadership. I figured it wouldn't always go well, but that you may have had others who've done that because it seems like the natural and the appropriate thing to do. So
that was really interesting. I came from a different angle. I don't know that I've met an FA that could work with. Like, it takes, like, so much, such a leap of faith to do that and, like, you basically unload the responsibility. It surprised me that they did it. And I know Rob, you were happy with it, but I just don't feel like many advisors could do that.
Yeah, so interesting. And then I wonder if – and Bob has been, like, really silent through this whole process, which maybe it's because he knows he's on the tail end of his career and he's really trying to empower Tracy and Kristen. I don't know enough to diagnose why he is that way just yet. But even given the opportunity to speak, he defers back to Tracy. So I wonder how this will go long term. And I also wonder if at some point Kristen doesn't start to, I mean, I hope they're compensating her really well for the level of responsibility she's going to be taking on.
Yeah, I mean, what if she leaves? Like, if your VP of leadership leaves the practice, that thing crumbles. Does it not?
I would think that's a huge threat. But I think it's the same way we talk about narcissism. Sorry.
I think it's I think you're delegating, but you're not abdicating.
Okay.
And I think that's the way to look at it. You can delegate and supervise leadership, and you can delegate and supervise everything, but you don't need necessarily abdicate it. So, you know, I really empowered my sales managers when I was running the region, but I kept a pretty close eye on what was going on. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. I think it's more of an exciting opportunity than it is a huge, you know, risk to the practice. Without the revenues, there's not much threat, you know.
Yeah.
The revenues are always dead.
Yeah. So what about Bob in that scenario? You know that team a lot better than we do. Did they choose to restart this process because, and I listened to that original call, but did they choose to restart it as a team, or do you think that was, you know, sort of led by Tracy? Like, what do you think about their dynamic? And I'm just getting an interesting read on them a little bit.
Well, I think what they did was they had hired another coach, and they were looking to hire another coach. They hired, I think, Matt Oxley and his group, and they were looking then to either rehire them or hire someone else. And they all sat around and talked and said, you know, basically we got the most out of coaching when we use Supernova. So why don't we go back? There's enough that we're missing. Why don't we go back to Supernova and see if that would make sense? And so when we talked, it became clear that they needed Supernova 2.0, but a complete revisit of 1.0 wouldn't hurt them, since Supernova has been so updated since they took it. There's plenty to learn. And it turns out, interestingly enough, they're going through it almost as if they've never gone through it before.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a coaching point of view, for you guys, if you can find teams that have gone through Supernova before, I think you can really bring some value.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
I don't think you need to. I mean, yes, do we want to coach new teams? Of course. Builds a bond that, you know, they'll never forget. It's just forever bond between you and them for helping them get through this. But this proves something to me that I didn't really understand, that going through it completely a second time, it's got tremendous value. I'm not sure people are willing to do that, but I'm shocked at how much value they're getting out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's almost like they have a foundation and a basis for understanding now that they didn't have before.
Yeah. So it tells you the learning process, in many cases, is much deeper than we anticipated.
Can I ask another question?
Yep.
What resources exist on, they talked a lot about, and I hear this resonate in all the calls, figuring out qualitatively how to segment so that they can determine which ones they're keeping, which ones they aren't, who's going where. Are there, and they talked about some of the other calls they made to additional advisors who've been through the Supernova process to learn their methodology. Is there like a library or a resource that exists for them so that they can sort of look at what others have done?
It's a good question. I would say no. I would say that they have us as their resource and their library, but have we quantified it and put it into various case studies or anything? No. I think the technology that you guys have is just a great entrance into that world. And then just personal experiences is what they, you know, unfortunately, that's what they need. And it's hard to get that unless you, I mean, I guess you could listen to every team that went through and see how each one dealt with it. But it's pretty much the same. You know, there's only so many questions and so many answers. It's a finite,
yeah.
It seems like an ocean to you guys at this point. There's a finite number of questions and there's a finite number of answers.
Okay, because what I feel like is they, in the absence of that, they typically just start with revenue. And as we know, like that's not always the best client to keep, you know, purely based on revenue.
Right. There's 11 different screens, and I keep going back and reminding them. But for them to get their arms around this, they have to deal with it and go through the mental gymnastics of what creates value.
Mm-hmm. And then I'll just take one more. Sorry.
Profitability is a big issue. You know, they don't notice that. They don't think of that. You know, how profitable is the client when you take into account everything? And do we have to travel to go see them twice a year? And what's the cost of that? You know, interesting.
Yeah.
I just had this. I'll just share this revelation. I had it last night. I'm doing some estate planning. I have a brother that has got some issues, so we're creating a trust for him. So that if my other brother and I pass away, it will be funded and provide for him for the rest of his life. And we're also creating a trust for buying a condominium for him, so I have a place to live. And just those two little things, each one is about $2,500 to $5,000 to create those trusts. And in our FAs, balk at charging for financial planning. And in reality, I mean, I'm going to pay the $5,000 without really going and searching out another quote or anything. It's just too much work. And I want to make sure it's right, and these people have done great estate planning for me in the past. My point is that I've probably spent $20,000 to $25,000 on estate planning fees for lawyers. And, you know, these guys are worried about charging $2,500 for a financial plan that covers everything. So it's interesting, right? I mean, so I just share that because that's a topic that's pretty hot, you know.
It's just a proof that they don't understand or believe in the value that they offer, because any advisor I've ever come across who has an issue or who has really errant pricing and it's typically too low, it's because they don't either know how to articulate their value or they really don't believe in the level of service that they offer.
That's right. It's all self-image. That's how they – when we ask them to set their minimums, that's a self-image issue. It's not a market issue, because we've seen in very remote places, people have very high minimums. You know, here I'm coaching teams that are in places, you know, some of the wealthiest communities, in Boca Raton, you know, Miami, and they're worried about setting a $1 million or $2 million minimum. It's kind of ridiculous. It's all self-image.
So true. The other thing I've learned in this process, which has been really helpful, is that you can take the fear out of the supernova process by just allowing, and we've had success doing this, allowing individuals to pair out the bottom as they replace at the top with the clients that reflect their top 20% and those that they'd like to have in their practice in the future. So that's been a much easier conversation than we've had in the past, where I'm struggling and where we've all had a couple of issues is we've done so much work with the practice analysis review and the coaching stuff inside of the wirehouses, and now that we're moving more to the independents, especially Raymond James, who we love and we've got a really nice relationship with and whose leadership has an interest in the work that we do, they have built a reputation among their advisors and not being heavy-handed. They'll offer suggestions, but they never dictate. And so that has become an issue in terms of getting teams to really want to participate and go through the process. It's just it's a much longer dance, and it takes a lot more courting than it has with the other firms. And so that's delayed our start a little bit. Have you had experience with more of the independents? And in some cases, like I'm dealing with some LPL teams that have great production, but they really don't care to – They're not good businessmen. They don't care about shoring up their practice and making it as profitable and as beneficial to the clients and to themselves as we would like. So that was a long way of asking, do you have experience in that space where you might be able to give us some advice?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that the independent channel is much more independent. I mean, they do not like to be told what to do or they're cocky in that sense, and they're afraid. They're much more it took me a while. I'm coaching one team and they're pretty much through it, and now they're devotees, you know, they're completely committed to the process. But they were very reticent to buy in initially. There was a lot of pushback on segmentation. And I just patiently waited them out and, you know, kept the persistent mantra going. And eventually they came around when they realized that, you know, there wasn't some third agenda that I had or whatever, that I was really only looking out for their best interest. It just took longer. And we had to dance.
And that's sort of what we're finding. If we can find the really large advisors who basically used to be wirehouse, those have been a good fit. But we just have to kiss more frogs, I guess, is a better way to say that for us.
Yeah.
But we're trying.
If you can find the guys that just recently came from other firms to Raymond James and the independent channel, you're going to have much more, how shall we say, much more compliant. They're going to be more eager to learn than they're used to coaching or used to some kind of, at least some kind of training. So training is, you know, something that, you know, some people really fear that it's, I don't know, I don't understand it, but there's, you know, you would not understand it either, Mary. I mean, you're pretty, you know, you understand training and thrive in that world, and you're like, wait a minute, we're going to offer you free? Well, and you're saying no. What's wrong with you?
Right. It's really hard not to be indignant sometimes with them. And sometimes that helps.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I think you move on. I mean, there's, you know, in any organization, you've got to get the rabbits first, the eager learners, the rabbits, and then other people see them thriving, and then you quickly get to a reasonable tipping point where others will come along. You know, you're never going to get them all. But when I get into an office or a market, if I can get three people to start with me, three teams, that's great. And then those three teams get up and tell their story, and then I'll sign up six teams. And then I'll sign up another, say, five or six teams. And then I've pretty much
hit.
I've gotten the majority of the people I will get out of that market.
That's more or less how we're starting with some top-down support. What's interesting is they are, I've never met individuals who are so leery of sharing with us information about their production levels and things like that. It's almost as if they view it as an indictment, and for us it's just, it's so, you know, it's as it's normal and as casual as an advisor asking a prospect or a client what their annual income is. Like, it just becomes second nature, but it's really interesting. Like, they're maybe because they don't have the same level of peer exposure, so they, you know, they see only their own production numbers perhaps, or they are, because they've existed on an island for so long, they're afraid that they're so inefficient that others will judge them. Like, I think it's a myriad of things, but it all boils down to what you mentioned earlier, and it's how they perceive themselves. So it's just been a really interesting study for us, but we have to stick with them for two reasons. The first is they need a lot of help, and we can move the needle pretty quickly for them. The second, of course, it's just the right thing to do for our industry and for clients, but these individuals also use mutual funds. They buy mutual funds, and they tend to hold them for a longer period of time. So it's a business case for us as well. It just can be a little bit frustrating when we've had such an easy and great time of sort of winding our way through Morgan Stanley.
Yeah. And Morgan Stanley is a particularly, I think it's particularly well run right now. I think it is. The managers are eager to be on the calls. They're very supportive, and their FAs, I think, are great. So, you know, that's who we've been coaching the most for the last 3 years, and I've enjoyed them a lot. Now, UBS is pretty much the same. Not so much Merrill. It's really interesting. Merrill sort of thinks they already know everything, you know. So it's where I'm really popular with Morgan Stanley right now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Where are we, Sharon? I don't know if you want to chime in on this, but where are we with, we were trying to pick, you know, 10 teams that we were going to spend time coaching this year and working together with Rob. Where do you know where we are on any of that stuff?
I think we were still waiting for you guys to feel comfortable as coaches. We weren't moving ahead until we worked on that. So.
Okay, so
I thought at the meeting we were looking for funding is what it seemed. We had determined that we would coach three or four teams and that we were looking for funding, and that was where we left it. I mean,
so that's sort of where I remember it too. And then I thought we talked with Amy and there was some flexibility in that later in the day. Sharon, do you want to talk with me offline and I'll circle back?
Yeah,
with Amy,
and I think maybe we should talk about it on tomorrow's call with Steve.
Okay. Because I think what's going to happen is we're going to get through week 12 here, and then if we don't do something with it, you know, if Ben and I don't do something
It's going to fall off the radar. I agree.
Yeah.
I understand. I understand.
Okay.
Yeah, that was
okay.
That was going to be my question somewhere in this discussion if I could bring it up, but thank you. Because, I mean, look, there's got to be, you know, the quid pro quo here, there's got to be something in it for everybody, and in order to move the game forward, that was what we were planning on. And, you know, and that gets you excited, gets me excited. We got challenges then, and there's a way forward. Just training is, you know, you got to get, it's like taking lessons in tennis the whole time and never playing a match. You got to get in there and have some fun.
Right.
Right.
We agree.
Okay.
Good. So that I feel pretty good about where we are otherwise. I know my task and my charge is to go back and make sure I've gone back through the modules. The nice part is I actually do have some time to do that this week, so I'm excited about that. I will circle back with Sharon. We'll talk about it on our call with Steve, our president, tomorrow, so hopefully we can get that hammered out. And there was something else that I can't remember. Oh, and then and then we're going to talk later today about some of the other things that we talked about during our wine-laden dinner.
Great.
Perfect. Ben, did you have anything else?
No, you up good?
All right. So far, so good. So thanks. This has been really helpful so far. Going through the process has been really beneficial. And I think, to your point, if we could identify some teams that have been through it before, which we've come across those who have an understanding conceptually, and those have been pretty open to coaching. So I think if we found someone who's actually been through it before, you're right, it would be a home run.
Yeah, I think you guys could really, and we can work on that. You know, what can we do for teams that have been through it to create a program that you guys could run with where you're creating some real value? I mean, other than just putting them back through the whole program. But we can work on that. So I think I think you want to try and get as much of your low-hanging fruit as you can, which would be those people that have gone through it, those people that have read the book, those people that have had others that they knew about went through it, and then finally the people that have never heard of it last. So, because they're going to be the hardest. And, you know, and also I would take it from another point of view, which is the eager learners. There's always eager learners, even in an independent group. There's going to be some people in there that are, you know, they're dying for help. They don't want to admit it, but they are. And this would be amazing for them. They just really eat this up. There's also groups that they may not be – there's a group of independents that just devour training and always have a coach. And they would be a great group too. So independents sometimes go the opposite way and eat up all kinds of training. And they're not they're not perfect either, because they tend to jump from idea to idea. But you will be able to sign them up. They'll sign up.
We just need to do a better job of figuring out who those are, and that's the benefit of, you know, accelerating time. So you're right. If we could figure out a formula for how to find those individuals, and it's not just production-based, that's what the problem is, we would be in a much better position. So I wonder if there's a way that we could, because we spend a lot of time, I'm just sort of brainstorming, Ben, in particular, to you. I wonder if, because we do so much with the Practice Intelligence Group at Raymond James, that we couldn't ask them to identify for us those individuals that frequently contact them or that utilize their services. Maybe that's a good starting point as well with Kristen.
Absolutely.
I would think so. Yeah, I think they'd be open to it, especially once we do a few of these off-sites for them.
Right. Okay. That's my idea for the day. Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Well, let me know if I can be of any help. Email, call, whatever. Happy to talk. Okay?
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, we'll talk to you in
a couple
hours.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.